Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. And today we have two guests, a brief holiday from the auto-destructive programme. The guests are Peter Todd, filmmaker, artist and curator. Peter was a founder member of the artist's venue in Newcastle Eton Basement while still at college. This venue then became Basement Group, of which he was also a founder member, which in due course, with a new group of members, would become Projects UK and today continues as Locus Plus. In addition to Eton Basement, he has exhibited at 2B Butler's Wharf, London, which brings us to my other guest, who is Dave Critchley. Dave Critchley studied at Stockport College, and was a central figure in the organisation of London Video Arts from its inception in 1976 and as manager between 1981 to 86. After LVA, he formed and ran the video production company Green Street. Now an art teacher, his work combines video, photography and installations such as Cradle to Grave, a permanent exhibit in the Wellcome Trust Gallery at the British Museum. So welcome to Peter Todd and Dave Critchley. Hello.
Hi.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for coming on. And I think the main topic of the afternoon's programme is going to be 2B or not 2B.
Not B2.
Not exactly. B2. You'll have to correct me if I jump onto B2 because they were kind of... more or less, but 2B Butler's Wharf, which was, or probably still is, just east of Tower Bridge, but now exists, I suppose, as a block of luxury flats. Maybe
it's certainly the floor that we had 2B is now above a French restaurant, I believe. Last time I looked, and I think you can buy a flat there for a couple of million, and. Just along from the Design Museum, a very different environment to the time that we were there. Yeah,
yeah. Which would have been when? When did it start?
There were people there from the very early 70s, but we started to run 2B as a studio at first in 1975, 76, around about that winter, and. Basically, it was a group of people who'd gravitated to London after leaving art school in Newcastle, Leeds, Brighton, mainly. Maidstone, I mustn't forget, also. So there was this sense of people having, you know, started their experiments with time-based art, let's say, finding their way to London and looking for a place in which they could continue that practice, really, together.
Right. Yeah. Mm. And how did it come about? How did you sort of choose that particular location or building? What was the sort of background to this?
Well, to be honest, I don't know the absolute genesis of it in that sense. I know that John Kippin and Charlie Hooker, actually, I think, were the first people to be offered the space from the management company. Quite how, I don't know, but a meeting was called in a pub called The Copper, which was then in the Courage Brewery, which was still functioning as a brewery at that time. So we met in the Copper pub. And actually, I might forgive me for just correcting that. I think we met in the Brewery Tap, which was the actual pub. In the brewery, and the Copper, which is on the end of Tower Bridge and is now called something else, became our sort of social place after meetings and performances on Saturday evenings. So that first meeting was just a group of people who knew each other, and I think this is an important thing to flag up, really, that you know, these things don't happen because of a kind of management decision in the first place. They just happen because people know each other and they want to get on and make work together, individually, or help each other out to find a space to do work, which at the time was not really present in the gallery system, or the certainly not you know, the big galleries or commercial galleries, in the way that it became with the YBA generation. So we had to actually find not only places to make our work, but also to show it, and an audience to show it to, who were our contemporaries, really. There were a lot of people down around Butler's Wharf area. You had X6 Dance Space, and Derek Jarman had a studio down there, and many others. So there was a real interest in what other people were doing, and a kind of conversation was ongoing, to use a word from the time, in that people were presenting what they did to each other.
Right. Peter, were you around at that time? Was that sort of, would you have gone to 2B?
I was really in Newcastle at that point, but obviously in contact with people like Dave and Alison Winkle, who'd kind of like moved down to London. And I think it was in Newcastle at that point, we were very much having a sort of similar idea that we were actually at the art school, but you also needed an actual space outside it. What's probably curious is the space we found and opened Eight and Basement a few months after 2B, Butler's Wharf, opened. Again, it was actually down on the quayside in Newcastle, in a building. It was the basement, in fact, of a warehouse. So again, you know, there's that kind of river and warehouse type spaces. And it was quite a unique space. In some ways, it was quite exciting because it was slightly on a kind of slope. Still is there. Well, it's now a hotel rather than, I think, block of flats. But the space itself was almost like sort of the inside of a kind of shotgun, where it had like sort of like two sort of long barrels, as it were, went up and narrowed at the top. And the main sort of space where you came in was, you know, sort of square bit. But then these two sort of tunnels that slowly got narrower sort of went away. It was quite... could be a bit damp as well sometime as well. But
there was a certain interaction between 2B and the 8 on Basement in Newcastle, where the people coming and going from the two spaces?
Or? Yeah, absolutely.
Very much so, yeah. So it was a dialogue, again, partly through some of the, you know, the artists and where they'd gone. And also, like, in particular, one of the tutors at Newcastle, Stuart Marshall, who then was in London as well at the Royal College of Art, I think.
Well, I mean, in a way, I'd like to, you know, name a whole great list of people, and I won't be exhaustive. But you know, it is important to say that this was all about, you know, groups of people moving around who might have known each other from school, certainly from foundation course. I mean, the 2B gang of people came from Alison Winkle, Martin Hearn, Mick Duckworth, Kevin Atherton, all from the Isle of Man. you know, pretty closely linked. Alan Stott, Stuart Marshall, and myself, actually all from Stockport, which you mentioned earlier. But I mean, I did study in Newcastle and then at the Royal College of Arts. And it's worth mentioning the environmental media course at the Royal College of Art, which was closed down by Jocelyn Stevens as an example to everybody of what not to do, which of course has come full circle, and that's what everybody does now. But in the mid 80s, when he closed it down, it was seen to be this sort of open-ended, free-form, do-anything-you-like kind of art course. And in fact, it was not. It was far from that, and it's been a great engine room, really, of people from, you know, Paul Burwell and Richard Deacon to a whole bunch of people working in many different media.
So what do you think, I mean, what were you two doing at the time? You weren't filmmakers, as such. Peter is now a filmmaker, but I presume at that time you weren't making films.
The college at that point didn't have kind of like film equipment. I mean, what we had then was video was just sort of coming in. So there was like the porta packs, you know, Sony porta packs, you know, you put them on your back and they were pretty heavy kind of things. So it was exploring that. But curiously, I always kind of stayed within the painting studios as it regards a physical kind of space, and the final show, as one had in those days, probably still do, you know, it had a number of works in which were, one was, you know, a couple of things mounted on a wall, but there was also some documentation, as there is now, of video pieces. It wasn't quite geared up to then, I think, probably having the video pieces in the kind of show. But, I mean, I think one thing that was quite interesting recently, doing a few years ago, I did a Basement, which was a programme looking back at that time. I was very much looking at David's piece, you know, Pieces I Never Did. Oh, and yeah. I saw him sort of sat at his desk, and I thought, oh, that's the desk he had in Newcastle. That was his sort of space at college. And then, of course, I realised he had the same space at the Royal College, and it was a bit like they only ever got a kind of desk space kind of to work in, but not a physical space to work in.
But I think this is a... you know, and I still have that. I mean, that's still my workspace. It's basically an office, and I have that in my studio now, and I have that at home. And if you're working in a multimedia installation, video production sort of way, I mean, you're working as a producer, director, whatever would work, and you're finding spaces as you need them, or you're using media in a way that is appropriate to the work you're doing. So. This is quite important in relation to 2B Butler's Wharf, because it was a 3,000 square foot space. The eight artists who rented it paid, you know, an eighth each, and it was our studio. But we very quickly sat down and said, hey, you know, let's not divide this space up. Let's not be parochial about our spaces, but let's keep it as a big space and use it to show our work. So it's more a following the time-based approach to work through into your studio space and into your way of working.
But these were studio spaces where you also exhibited, I suppose. I mean, there were obviously, I presume, on probably in both your cases, there was no attempt to get into the gallery system or to any such kind of exhibition space. You were working and showing in the same area.
Well, the gallery system wasn't there, basically, in terms of the work we were doing at that time. I mean, there were notable exceptions. I mean, the Acme Gallery was putting on Stuart Brisley and Kerry Trengove and others and ourselves. And
what about, there was the Serpentine show, wasn't there?
There was
the big video show at Serpentine, which I think you were part of.
The video show in 1975 was a great show that was also a catalyst for both bringing people together who had an interest in this. Obviously, David Hall, Stephen Partridge, Hoppy, John Hopkins, and... you know, things grew from that, and ultimately, I guess you'd say London Video Arts, LVA, grew out of that. But it was also very much, it grew through activities like 2B Butler's Wharf as well, which was the kind of fertile ground for that work grew out of, in terms of the debate and seeing what people did.
Right.
Yeah, I think one of the things that was interesting as well about both the spaces, or seemed particularly exciting, was this thing that, you know, both of them sort of ended up with a format where you'd have something every Saturday at, say, 7 o'clock for a particular kind of season. It was a bit like, you know, you go along one time and there might be a performance, the next piece might be a sound piece, the next piece might be films, or the next piece might be an installation. And it's a bit like sometimes now when people sort of look back at that time, you get a history that's the history of video art that goes through that period, the history of artist film that goes through that period. And you don't quite get an idea. One of the things was, you know, people were working, you know, across a number of kind of media, but also there was that kind of whole kind of mix across things that, you know, one week you would go and, you know, there would be something kind of very different, and it almost kind of like changed, each week. And when we had the opening show of Eighton Basement, which was December 76, and we did have Stuart Marshall doing a sound piece, which he'd actually done down at 2B Butler's Wharf as well. He performed it there with Nicholas Collins, who was a sound artist, and then they were both in the opening show of Eighton Basement along with four people. And what was quite interesting, you know, students essentially, was that, you know, the tutors, if you hold them in that way, were just straight there, mm-hmm. in the show as well. And I think that's the same thing that happened probably.
So the students were curating their lecturers, as it were.
Oh, really? Oh, right.
And I mean, this is an interesting, just to jump forward to and I know you spoke recently to John Smith and the curators of the RCA show, and the fact that you now have an RCA course in curating is, to our eyes, I'm sure, quite extraordinary, you know. because without really realising it, that's what we were doing. You know, we were curating like mad from the word go.
Yeah.
And yet I never kind of thought of it in a formal way at all.
Right. Do you think they benefit from the formal training as curators? Or?
Well, I'm sure in the current day's system
they
do. Or
is it better to be a practitioner?
Well, I think the two go together, you know, I really do. And I don't have a problem with it. You know, I think it's good that it's recognised as a valid area to train up in, and, you know.
Yeah. I mean, should we mention B2, do you think? Or is that a bit of a kind of diversion?
Because
just so for people, we're not confusing ourselves. We've been talking about 2B, and now we're mentioning B2, which was across the river.
Yep.
On which wharf?
Wapping Wharf. Yeah.
Which was a little bit later. And I remember, I did go there a few times. I mean, my only memory of 2B was actually wandering around Derek Jarman's place with the raised toilet on a date. but B2 I did go to a couple of screenings there. Notably, Kurt McDowell on a Sunday afternoon, which was absolutely, I don't know, shocking, we should say. I
can mean, you be specific on air?
I can. There were two black and white films made by Kurt McDowell, which I've never seen programmed anywhere since, presumably programmed by James Mackay. Mm. The first one was called Loads, which... right.
We got it.
Okay. And the second one included footage, apparently, of a lobotomy, but I had to leave before they actually showed that footage. And I thought, I've had enough of this, I'm out.
Yeah.
But my two friends stayed to the end and came out at the end and told me all about it. So that's Kurt McDowell. B2.
Okay. Well, I think, B2 was, I think I'm right here in saying it was ran between 79 and about 84 or so. And David Dawson, Akiko Hada, James Mackay and others, you know, were kind of running things and doing things there. Now, you know, we're all friends and we all know each other, especially through LVA and subsequent work, you know, including very recent work. I mean, I'm just going to digress slightly. Akiko and I are involved in something called the Food Group, which includes Jeremy Welsh and Robert Warby, who's a Radio 3 presenter now, and... Gavin Hodge and Fast Forward in New York, music and sound artists, and John Drinkwater, who also performed at 2B. And we stay together online. We started by emailing each other pictures of what we were eating, hence the name, Food Group. But obviously we're all artists. We communicate about everything. So it's kind of shifted that kind of communal... interchange into the present day through email as a format rather than Facebook, because it still remains as a kind of discrete group, and obviously you can email other people if you want to, but it's this sense of having this kind of need to collaborate, really. I guess I'm sort of owning up to this being a sort of serial collaborator in whatever way I work, including the pharmacopoeia work I do with Susie Freeman and Dr. Liz Lee. But just to come back to the B2B thing, I think it's interesting to look at them as, you know, on a line, really, of that development of groups of people working together at particular times and reflecting what's happening at that time. So the B2 stuff was of its time. The early 80s were quite different from the mid-70s.
Yeah.
And the work at 2B Butler's Wharf tended to be of that kind of structuralist, materialist sort of...
self-reflexive?
Ethos, self-reflective, exactly, to the nth degree.
Yes. Yeah. Which was part of the video technology at the beginning, wasn't it? A lot of sort of visual
feedback.
But
it was part of performance work as well. And I mean, but something that kind of bridged the gap a little bit between what you're talking about there at B2 was a guy called Alistair McLennan who did a piece at 2B where he came and he brought a stone from Northern Ireland which weighed 14 pounds. So it was a stone. And the piece was he was going to live in the gallery until he'd lost the equivalent weight. And he camped out in the studio, and he saved all his urine and anything else he did. And he hung out in the space. People came to watch him, and he had a weighing machine, obviously. And at the point where he lost 14 pounds, the piece was over.
Right.
And so, you know, that kind of visceral. Right. It's still a structural piece, you know. But
durational, all that stuff.
But what you use as your medium and your method can be enormously variable.
Right.
As I'm sure was the case at Eight and Basement.
I just wanted to, because I'm sort of been doing this auto-destructive series, I just want to read this bit out. Critchley actually admits to having burnt all his paper and documentary photographic work in 1983. And disposing of all his videotapes, including the masters in his possession, in black bin bags outside LVA for collection by the Soho bin men. Can you expand on this?
Okay. Well, I'll be honest here. I, at that point in time, became a Christian. And I reanalyzed my work from a completely different perspective. And I probably wrongly destroyed my artwork as being irrelevant and superfluous, as it were, to what I found myself believing and finding out about. Having found more out about it, I realised I could have quite easily kept the work. Actually, it was fine. God, it's a big God. He can stand it. You know, he can take it. And there's no need to actually destroy your work if you become a Christian. So that's okay, folks. It's all right. The reason was, at the time, I felt actually very conditioned by my own work, that it was through the process of making work, the work kind of takes you over in a way that you become identified by your work, which is why we're here now. And I'm quite happy about that now, very happy about it. But it's an interesting relationship between the whole person, a human being, whatever, and the work they do. And I think a lot of my work is about that line, actually, now. Mm. I'm working on a piece with Liz Lee with the Pharmacopoeia about death, and just looking at the moment of death and how people approach that. And you find you have a very interesting line to work with there. I won't go off on one now, but to start a discussion about what do you visualize the moment of death to be is to immediately put people on the spot and also come up with some quite interesting responses. So if you start pushing things a little bit into those kind of areas, then it's no longer conditioned just by the line of your art work or art thinking or debates, but it you're expanding that debate, I think, to the largest possible parameters, is what I think I'm trying to say. Right. And therefore, actually, that all that work I destroyed was my reaction at the time to trying to start afresh.
Right.
You know,
that's fascinating.
But I'm absolutely delighted that some of it survived, and we've since been able to reconstruct pieces I never did, for instance, from what was kept in collections, including at the Lux.
Right.
The Lux being an extension, really, of LVA, as well as the Co-op. you know, so these things, they work together. And Adam Lockhart at Dundee helped me to basically reconstruct pieces that had been destroyed, which again, I'm happy about.
Peter, have you ever been tempted to destroy your films?
Not specifically, but obviously one's not kept all the work, and it's not possible probably to kind of do so. So I certainly got sort of work from the same period that, you know, from the 70s and 80s, which one hasn't got anymore, right. And it's kind of gone. Although on the other hand, a bit like Dave, I've got one or two pieces, or perhaps the thing is a documentation of some of the performances I did at that point in terms of photographs, because there were some we did at, I mean, in the Northeast at that point, there were other venues like, you know, Sunderland Arts Centre, where a number of us kind of, they had a performance week. So that was gives an idea of slightly the kind of like wider cultural gallery type spaces in Newcastle.
Right.
Because also in Edinburgh, being that far north, you also had the Richard DeMarco Gallery as well.
Oh, yes.
And also over in Cumbria, there was a gallery being run by a Chinese artist as well. So there was kind of quite a number of kind of interesting spaces that were taking things on. But equally, it was nice to have one's own, you know, group space as well. It was interesting hearing Dave talk, though, because obviously the piece we may be waiting for us to see, the show, which is him doing all the pieces he never did, that would that could be a show now that
Oh, you mean actually realizing them? Yeah, well, hey, that, you know, there's a lot of work to do there. Yeah, but I mean, also, I'm gonna, if I may, shamelessly plug the fact that piece is in a show at Raven Rogue Gallery.
Oh, really?
Okay. Next month, show entitled Polytechnic, curated by Richard Grayson.
Okay.
The nice connection again is that Richard Grayson was part of the Basement Group.
We are afraid we're rapidly running out of time.
Okay.
Sorry. Peter, have you got a film coming up anywhere? Are you showing anything?
Not really at the moment, just working slowly.
Just working away. You've got a new film. What's your last film?
I did one called We Saw, which showed at the Aurora Festival in Norwich last year, which was really nice. I'm really pleased with that.
You still shooting on 16mm?
Still shooting on 16mm.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, thank you very much to Peter Todd and Dave Critchley. Shall we play out with this? Tell us something about this CD, Dave. What is this?
Okay, this is a CD by Kathy X, who's my sister-in-law, X. She's in a Eurobilly band in Berlin. And I think the connection between London and Berlin now is fantastic. It's the same kind of lively interchange.
What's it called? I'm going to have to bring it in
The
now.
Piece is called...
we don't know.
What's Money.
Shut up and listen.